George L.K. Morris and Susie Freelingheisen, prolific abstract artists since the late 1930s, were leaders of the national and international art scene, collectors and intellectuals. They created a Berkshire home that reflected their aesthetic worlds. Upon their deaths in 1988, Susie Freelingheisen left instructions that the house and studio and art collection be used for an educational purpose. The house and studio opened for visitation in 1998. This summer, the Freelingheisen, Morris House and Studio present an exhibition entitled American Abstract Artists, A Collection, Unseen Works. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock, Carol Troyan, who is curator emerita of American paintings at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, will present a lecture entitled Protests and Patronage, Morris, Freelingheisen, and the Promotion of Abstract Arts in the 1930s. We are joined this morning by Freelingheisen. I'm gonna say it right eventually. We are joined by Freelingheisen, correct?
Correct.
It's your name, so I don't want to screw it up. Freelingheisen, Morris House and Studio Director Kinney Freelingheisen. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's wonderful to have you back. Thank you very much for being with us. 21st year.
21st year of being open to the public.
And what has that meant to you? What has that meant to the family of having people, and I assume you got a lot of this from the 20th anniversary, of an understanding of what this place has meant to you, to the family, and to the community?
It means a lot to me because when I started in 1988, actually, when my aunt died, I really didn't know the work. I didn't know the house very well, and I think ever since I stood in the courtyard and looked at the house, it's been talking to me, telling me secrets, and we know so much more. We have such a richer understanding of the period, the architecture, the ideas than we did when we started, and even though that period was pretty well known.
So let's talk about some of the surprises for you. You knew about the period. You knew about the family, obviously, but then you have to put all this into a context.
Yes.
What was that process like?
Well, I liked art, but I didn't know the period well, and that period of abstract art, I didn't know it well. And it opened up to me as an eloquent language, and I realized even though there's a lot of people who love abstract art, they aren't familiar with that language. And so the house has helped people to really become acquainted versus just being knowledgeable with that art and with those ideas.
And again, to your own knowledge, so was there, how much of a learning curve was there at the beginning for you?
How their art conveys itself. It was, I'm just glad that I got interested in it because you don't have to be an expert to understand it. And this is the idea that those artists had, that the art is a real thing unto itself. And it's like architecture. And they also, just to paraphrase one who said, it's like a rock or a tree. You don't need someone to explain it to you. You just have to look at it and think about it. So there wasn't you didn't have to be educated. You just had to sort of get on board and go with it. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. In your getting on board and going with it, then interpreting it for other people and then keeping on this legacy, those are all very important but very separate missions, aren't they?
They really are. There's several missions in there. There's the story of the artists, and as I say, over the years, we'd learn more and more about it. There's the context of the house, which, you come into the house. There's marble floors. There's a wrought iron banister that integrates with the mural behind it. You go into the living room. There's a leather floor. There's a wet bar. And you almost feel like the artists have invited you in to sit in their living room with them. So all that context really brings along all the things that are already established in the art historical journals, and so you ease into the period very nicely.
So let's talk about the exhibition, American Abstract Artists, A Collection, Unseen Works, featuring over 25 works. Talk about this collection and how in particular it came about.
So we call it Unseen Works because they've been in the racks when I first started getting their art into one place. They've been in the racks for the 21 years that we've been open, but they've been in George L.K. Morris's closets for many years before that. I knew some of them, but we realized that this was his group. He was a leader of this group of artists who couldn't get seen in the 1930s, and they got their first show at the Scribe Galleries. And this was the first time we've put them out and looked at them as a group, and they all sort of start singing together. And it's really a wonderful thing.
I love that term of them singing together. So how do you know that that is going to happen with these particular works, or don't you, until you see them all together?
Well, I knew some of them, some would come out, but to really put them all out, get them all dressed up with cleaning and sent a lot up to the lab at the Clark and framing and placing them in such an order, they really start to make sense, and you can take two or three of them and just look at them and you start to see your own narrative of what's going on in the painting, because they're designed that way to be somewhat ambiguous. So you think something looks like something and your eye moves around, and then you get on another track. And they're designed to be dynamic so that every person who comes in can respond to them.
So give me a little bit of the history of this. So this really dates back to a show in 1937.
That's right.
So what was happening in 1937 that put these particular paintings and these particular painters together?
Well, it was the Depression. They were inspired from the Cubists going back to before World War I and before the onset of World War II. They were inspired by these wonderful ideas of abstraction, that art was more than just a representation of something you've already seen. So they came up with this term of non-objective art, that it wasn't based on anything. And the public came to this show, and the artists handed out 1,500 questionnaires, and 90% of the people said, we were interested in this new stuff and we'd like to see more of it. And as George L.K. Morris said, 3% said they'd seen enough. but the critics came on really with incredible hostility. The one thing was to say this group of artists is un-American, kind of implying that they were, you know, communists or socialists. So the criticism was very relentless. And New York was not a big art capital in 1937.
And that it was, so because of the abstraction, and it was non-objective, as you say, not based on anything.
Yeah.
Then how were they able to explain it and explain this whole new language to a whole new audience? Yeah.
Well, they were
one that they were developing, yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, they were developing it themselves.
Yeah. What's beautiful is that they were all kind of in sync with their ideas. They certainly had differences of opinion. Some were very, very pure, so you get right angles, art made out of right angles, but some were taking rhythms from nature. So they were also verbally, they were very articulate in their ideas. Trying to think of the critics, for example, they offered these wonderful rebuttals to the criticism, which was really dumbed down. It was designed to, you know, appeal to sort of a oversimplified view of the world, and I think they were feeling very threatened by it. So they did have wonderful quotes, and I don't have one. I paraphrased one a few minutes ago, but
right.
But it really, and George L.K. Morris writes about how this art was a democratic idea. It was for every man. And that's where you, when you come to see the show, that's where you start. And you don't spend a lot of time reading explanations. But we kind of guide you into the acquaintanceship by looking.
In the idea, so selections from the 1937 show's catalog, a print for portfolio of original lithographs that sold for 50 cents, will also be shown with the paintings they relate to. What background does that give us in looking at these works, do you think?
The lithographs? Yes. They're so related. And the point is, they're not just copies of the paintings. And this was another bold step to say, we're using traditional means of creating art with this art. And it sort of enlarges the field of interpretation. You can get a lot out of a lithograph. It can help you to interpret what's going on in the painting. So it's a wonderful. I didn't know we owned a portfolio. So when we started, they were in boxes.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And when you pair them with the work, you realize that the paintings that we have in the collection is what Morris was collecting during the show, because that painting was paired with that litho. And we don't have a lot of checklists of what was in the show, but we know these 25 or so pieces that we have were acquired to show in part that there was commercial viability for this show in 1937.
Let's talk about the event tomorrow at 3 o'clock. By the way, our guest is Kinney Freeling-Eisen. He is the studio director of the House and Studio. Give us a sense of what's going on tomorrow. Carol Troyan, a curator emerita of American paintings at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and giving a very specific lecture, Protests and Patronage, about the promotion of abstract arts in the 1930s.
I love her title. She's a very interesting art historian and I think very impressive credentials coming from the Boston Museum of Fine Arts. And I got to know her because she wrote an essay on a painting by George L.K. Morris that was acquired by a Rollins College in Florida. And I just thought it was an excellent essay. And I found a way of contacting her and said, look, we're going to do this show. Would you be interested in writing about it? And she said yes, and she has a wonderful sense of what their whole group was all about and of the time. So I'm looking forward to some very fine scholarship about what it was to be like to be an abstract artist in the 1930s.
Do you have a sense of what that was like through your own lineage, through growing up in the family, from what is handed down?
Well, I knew George and Susie pretty well as a young adult. I mean, by the time I was in my early 20s, George died. But he was a man from a privileged background, but totally dedicated to his principles in art and to his contemporaries. So he had a very beautiful, very articulate mind. But he wasn't living a superficial life in any way. He was really sacrificing a lot of or giving all of his means, because he was a writer for the Partisan Review. He actually financially supported them. He was very in the moment. And when he was in Paris in the late 20s and 30s, he was involved with those modern artists which MoMA was you know, trying to collect at the time, but George was there with them. And so his collector's eye was very genuine, very authentic, and not based on this is the next wave. It was this is the right thing to do, this development to abstraction.
The idea for the collection was it internal, or was there always a plan, do you think, for it to be more external, to share it with others?
That's a very good question, because he was cut off from life in this car accident, so I don't know what he wanted to do, but he surrounded himself with his art, so a lot of it was to guide his own instruction, especially the older Cubist piece. But his contemporaries, he was very close with them, so I think he collected for quality. I don't know that. In fact, I don't think he envisioned a museum to himself. So that was an idea that sort of came out informally
Well, that was Susie's idea.
That was Susie's idea, and it was never something that she said, this is what I want you to do. The only thing she said to me is that I want people to learn about abstract art. So that, hence, paintings used for educational purposes. But George's eye was so good that he really selected beautifully, and not always the blockbuster piece, but the piece that you could spend time with and live with.
I'm going to ask you a huge question to be answered in 30 seconds, but to be handed that, is it a blessing, is it a burden, or both?
It's a privilege, it's an honor, I'd say it's a blessing, and it comes with a lot of challenge. So I love what the collection and the house and the architecture do for people on a daily basis. People seem to just so excited when they come out of there. They say, I never understood this stuff, and now I'm getting it. So to be part of that is wonderful.
Well, the exhibit is American Abstract Artists, a collection, Unseen Works. It's on view through October 13th at the Frelinghuysen Morris House, which is in Lenox, Massachusetts. If you go to Frelinghuysen, it's FrelinghuysenHuysen.org. You can find out all about the cool things they have going on, the exhibition, the talk that I talked about earlier with Carol Troyan, and the house and studio tours, and even the demonstrations that you have on Fridays, one you'll have, an hour ago. Okay, so it's wonderful to have you here, Kenny. Thank you very much for being with us. Have a beautiful rest of the summer with your season.
Thank you, Joe. My pleasure.
Great pleasure to have you here. Again, you can find out more at Frelinghuysen.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.